It's Friday, March 15th, 2024, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. A man is not a plan. He is a companion. But in the specific case of Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis and prosecutor Nathan Wade, there will be no companionship. They will not be bonding for the upcoming trial of Donald Trump. 14 co-defendants, originally 18, four took pleas. Fulton County Judge Scott McAfee said that Willis made bad choices and conducted herself unprofessionally, but that didn't warrant disqualification, provided that either she or Wade be removed from the case. It's going to be Wade. Otherwise, things really fall apart. We are, I have noted recently, in a time when everything up to serving hard time, everything including indictment, impeachment, and dishonorable discharge, is framed as an exoneration. It's not, and this one wasn't. The judge rebuked Willis, writing, quote, "Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly." So I doubt Willis will be giving testimony at another AME church as she did before this disqualification hearing began.
How come God, the same black man I hired, was acceptable when a Republican in another county hired him and paid him twice the rate? Oh, y'all ain't hear me. In another county, the elected official has the authority to pay him twice the rate. Why is the white male Republican's judgment good enough, but the black female Democrats not?
The answer is because they weren't dating Nathan Wade. You were. Judge McAfee wrote that while that speech didn't warrant disqualification either, quote, it was still legally improper, adding, quote, providing this type of public comment creates dangerous waters for the district attorney to wade into further, no pun intended. He also wrote, this finding is by no means an indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. It's highly questionable that the trial will take place at Willis's proposed start date in October, even if it is helmed by a lawyer other than Wade, who Judge McAfee called, quote, patently unpersuasive in his testimony. The lawyers for all those co-defendants, they could appeal. They have a call discussing that strategy soon. And of course, the reputation of the prosecutor may have taken a hit, and that hit might make its way into the minds of whatever jurors are impaneled when, and we gotta say if, the trial actually starts. On the show today, it is an Antoine Tig. I mean, it's been a while since we collected all the data on all the feedback, but we will give you feedback on feedback today. Oh, I should also note, we're doing a big series. Crime Week will be upon us. But next Thursday, I and the journalist Nancy Rommelman will be speaking in a synagogue in New York, Brotherhood Synagogue in Gramercy Park. I can't post this on social. They don't want me to put the actual link in, I think, the show notes, because they are worried, and this is their right to be worried about protests or violence. So I'll just say it here among us, the community. If you care to come, you do have to register for the event. It is free. They do have security concerns. The website is brotherhoodsynagogue.org. Spell synagogue like you spell synagogue, not like I spell synagogue. But first, not before the speech at the synagogue, but next, I should say, but next, Jake Tapper of CNN is hosting and executive producing an entertaining, instructive, well-constructed new series, The United States of Scandal. New episodes are on CNN every Sunday at 9, and this week's subject, Jim McGreevy, former governor of New Jersey. I am a gay American. It's a very well-done episode. Dan Savage shows up. He's truly excellent. So far, the series has covered Spitzer, John Edwards, Mark Sanford, Blagojevich. Jake Tapper talks specifics with me and answers if the cover-up really is worse than the crime. I'd say maybe Sanford, yes, Spitzer, no, Watergate, maybe, Aaron Burr, certainly not. Jake Tapper up next. Hi. Hi, I'm here to talk about Surfshark, the VPN, Surfshark. What's a VPN? Well, VPN, of course, stands for Very Porcine Narwhal. No, it doesn't. It doesn't stand for a pig-like unicorn whale, but it is, in fact, versatile, like that animal might be. A VPN is a virtual private network. It's an extremely useful tool. One pretty common way to use it, let's say you're a subscriber to, I'll throw out a brand name, Netflix, and you would like to access the Netflix catalog that they might have in France or the Czech Republic, you can do that. Tis your ability with a VPN. Or what I do is I like a lot of the podcasts that are available on certain national broadcasters prominent in Europe, but you can't always hear them here. But if you were in Europe, if you were in the UK, you could. I use it for that. Paywalls, there is another thing. I'm in favor in general of paying for journalism, and I do. Oh boy, do I. But sometimes you just need to read that third article and you're locked out after a second. With a VPN, you can access it. Plus, think of it like a mask. You don't always want everyone tracking your activity online. And don't think of a mask as you're doing something sneaky or surreptitious. Think of the masks we wore during COVID when it was necessary to do so. It's just about hygiene. The Surfshark VPN provides that service as well. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/gist. Enter promo code GIST for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right, 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/gist.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
There's an excellent new series on CNN, and it's called The United States of Scandal. Jake Tapper is the interviewer and host. It airs Sunday nights at 9, and what I like about it is a few things. One, they put in the middle of your screen some really fascinating and interesting characters, shall we say, characters. Rod Blagojevich is there, Jim McGreevy, former governor of New Jersey, really digs a little deep intrapersonally about what happened to him. And there is Riel Hunter, John Edwards, Girlfriend, there you go. Thank you, Jake. Jake Tapper joins me now, and we're going to talk about Scandal in the series. Hi, welcome back to The Gist, Jake.
I'm sorry that I jumped in like that, but I was personally schooled on the use of that word by Paula Broadwell, who had an extramarital dalliance with a general of note, and she educated me about the fact that there is no male version of that word,
right.
And I thought, that's an excellent point, and I tried to remove it from my vocabulary, so now I say girlfriend. So I don't want you to think, I just got there before you, but I did not get there on my own.
Right. Well, that's how being woke works. When you wake up 1 second before the next guy, you got to tell him.
Well, and I woke up. That's a good point.
That's right.
We don't have a male equivalent of that word. Therefore, inherently, it is sexist.
Yeah. Paramour, I think, is probably the same.
That's fine.
Also. Yeah. So, before we get to some of the individual episodes, has Scandal, the idea of political scandal, how many stories you are asked to report about political scandal, how much that defines what we think of as politics or political coverage, has that changed in the time you've been a journalist?
I think it has. I started as a journalist a few years at freelance and right before the Clinton scandal broke, Clinton Lewinsky scandal. And then the reason I think it's changed, though, is not necessarily Bill Clinton so much as I think Donald Trump. And for a couple reasons. One, I think that, you know, he changed the rules of how you respond to a scandal. I've never seen anybody fighting off more court cases, allegations, accusations than this individual, Donald Trump. And yet he just, you know, denies all of them. There's just like, there's no, and there's no, you know, the tried and true advice of scandal in Washington, D.C. is get it all out on your own terms, you know, apologize and, you know, try to do better, pledge to do better. For Donald Trump, it doesn't do any of that. None of it's out on his own terms, no apology, et cetera, et cetera. So in some ways, he's rewritten the rules. In other ways, I think that because of him, other scandals might not seem as big because, I mean, I have to be honest, I was kind of drag kicking and screaming to the George Santos scandal because I just thought we covered it, but I was not as fascinated with it as others in journalism because I just thought, yeah, we get it. He's, yeah. You know, he's a liar.
What are the layers? What are the textures? What are the implications? The guy lied and got elected.
Yeah. And he's, you know, we'll cover like if he gets kicked out, sure. We'll cover if there are actual developments, but I just wasn't as fascinated by each drip drip of lies because I was just like, I feel like we know this guy and there's really important stuff going on in the world. I don't know that I want to waste time with him, but that said, you know, the scandals continue. I'm just looking up. I see on my TV here, Senator Menendez just pleaded not guilty. I mean, there will always continue to be scandals.
Yeah. It does seem to me that there's actually less corruption, or they're catching politicians being corrupt less often. And some of that is, and maybe we'll get to this, some Supreme Court rulings. But do you think that that's actually the case, that there is less flat out textbook letter of the law corruption?
It's such a good question. No, I don't. I think first of all, on the local level, it's being caught less because of how, for you know, whoever you want to blame, whether it's you know, predator capitalists or whomever, a lot of local news sites are dying, and we're losing a lot of watchdogs who would be keeping an eye on local councilmen or what, aldermen, etc. So I think that what's often said in Washington is, you know, the real scandal is not what's illegal, but what's legal. So that's an issue too. I mean, Jared Kushner and the $2 billion from the Saudis is a remarkable scandal, but there does not appear to be anything illegal about it, as far as I can tell. So I just think that, so no, the answer is no. I don't think there's less of it.
So we mentioned Trump already. Four of the first six episodes, Rod Blagojevich, John Edwards, Jim McGreevy, Valerie Plame. There are Donald Trump resonances, and sometimes not even resonances. Donald Trump pardoned Rob Blagojevich. John Edwards, I don't know if this comes up, but he was tried and there was a hung jury on a case that was, it's probably the closest known case to the New York Alvin Bragg case against Donald Trump for writing a check to cover up his affair with a porn star. Jim McGreevy, what we focus on is I am a gay American and him coming out as gay and having a person on staff who was his lover. We don't focus on the fact that he was doing so much business with Charles Kushner,
right?
Certainly implicated. Now, do you think being steeped in the world of Trump affected your choices and the choices of the documentary makers? Or would you say that if we're doing the five biggest or juiciest scandals, it's just going to be the case that we'll be reminded of Trump so often?
No, honestly, a lot of it was really just booking dependent. There were a lot of scandals that we made a list, and then we just went out and tried to get either the people who were directly involved in the scandals, which we did with Riel Hunter, John Edwards' girlfriend, and Jim McGreevy and Rod Blagojevich, or we tried to get people who were involved in the scandals like Valerie Plame. She was, you know, a victim of the scandal, or people who were close to the primary individuals like the chief of staff to Mark Sanford and the chief of staff and an outside advisor to Elliot Spitzer. It was really, we weren't looking for nuances having to do with Trump. We were just looking for good bookings.
Did you want to represent constituencies? Did you say to yourself, you know, how do we do a scandal show without a Chicago scandal, without a New Jersey scandal?
No, they just lend themselves to that, those two amazing states. I mean, Illinois has had three governors go to prison, three or four governors go to prison in the last 20 years. So they, you know, but honestly, Blagojevich was just a good story. And I really think that if Shakespeare were alive today, he would be writing stories like these because they are about these larger than life characters who fall prey to the basest and most simple of human instincts. For Blagojevich, it's power and greed. For the other four politicians in it, McGreevy, Spitzer, Sanford, and Edwards, it's lust. Two with a woman, one with lots of women, that's Elliot Spitzer, and one with a man, that's McGreevy. And then the sixth one is a really complicated story having to do with WMD and Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson. And so it's kind of more about power too, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, but I think that what you were trying to make a point with the Valerie Plame scandal, which is consider this a scandal. The scandal is often not just the easy fruit of this person went on trial or that person admitted to an extramarital affair. Think about how the system and the media, you didn't want to let the media off the hook, how they conspire. And we should consider this a scandal.
Yeah, I mean, I ultimately, and I'm still tinkering with the Valerie Plame one because, you know, it's not on for a couple more weeks and I'm still, I until these things are done, they're not done. But ultimately, yeah, I think the media, the news media was, we were the heroes in the other five, but in this one, we weren't so much the heroes. And one of the things that's interesting about going back and looking at these stories is seeing how we covered them. We in the news media covered them in real time. And, for the most part, I think we do a pretty good job. One other note, by the way, before I forget, Jack Smith, the special prosecutor investigating Donald Trump, he played a role, not a major role, but he played a role in the Edwards prosecution. And we didn't mention that because it just didn't seem relevant. He wasn't the chief prosecutor, et cetera, et cetera. But there is also, if one wants to look at it this way, whether it's Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, going after Blagojevich, Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, pursuing whoever leaked Valerie Plame's name, or the special prosecution of John Edwards, there is also a subtext, if one is inclined to look for it, of prosecutions that are out of control.
Mm-hmm. That's what Blagojevich says about it.
That's what he thinks about it. There are a lot of conservatives who think that the Valerie Plame scandal was ultimately, and look, just at the end of the day, the only person charged with Scooter Libby, and that was for misrepresentations or lying to the grand jury, to the FBI, nobody was prosecuted for leaking Valerie Plame's name.
Well, you say a lot of conservatives, but, you know, a couple points on that. The ideological skew, I think, is complete. And so when we think about the Bush administration, was it that, you know, this was in the service of conservatism or this was in the service of just the agenda of that particular White House, which was conservative? When we talk about, you know, some of these other scandals, there are Democrats representative. Blagojevich was a Democrat. You can't not be and to succeed in Chicago. And then he becomes the champion of, or his champion becomes Donald Trump. There are, I think, let's say Edwards, McGreevy, Spitzer. Those are three Democrats. Plame beyond the Democrat or Republican designation. Sanford's
it's four. Four Democrats, two Republicans.
Yeah.
But that wasn't, again, we just went looking for the best stories. I mean, like, I guess in a perfect, I'm not Jay Leno, like writing down, like, you know, Jay Leno was famously proud of his jokes were always 50-50 against Democrats and Republicans. Yeah. I get it. That's not really, you know, one could argue just go where the jokes are. Don't worry about the ideological skew. But in any case, he was proud of that. For us, it was just like, well, what are the best stories with the best guests we can get? And it ended up being four Democratic scandals, two Republican scandals. But that's not to say if there is a season two, that it wouldn't be all one party or the other. I don't really care. I just want there to be good stories.
I think to me, it points out that the motivation for corruption or scandal isn't so much ideological. It's what you were talking about before, if Shakespeare were alive, or Homer or Sophocles. It's just the personal demons that people have. And every Greek tragedy is about a fatal flaw. And when we find out about scandals, we find these individuals' fatal flaw so often.
Yeah. And a lot of them, it's pretty base stuff. Like I said, for four of them, it's lust.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you about that. It is lost. I mean, they did have sex with people outside their marriage. But can you argue that an element of it was what politics force upon politicians, that to be a successful politician, in McGreevy's case, he couldn't be gay. But even in John Edwards' case, he had to play up the marriage and the love that maybe, you know, he just wasn't feeling.
I think it's especially true in McGreevy's case, 100%, because what people, the context of the McGreevy story is that this all happened in 2004, and we've come a long way as a society when it comes to the acceptance of LGBTQ people. And in 2004, you know, for kids listening who don't remember, George W. Bush was in part running on re-election by opposing same-sex marriage. Even though, you know, the guy running the Republican National Committee for him was a closeted gay man, Ken Mellman. So, I mean, yes, to a degree, that was part of the McGreevy scandal. But the bigger part of the McGreevy scandal was that he was employing this man that he fell in love with, Golan Sapel, as his Homeland Security advisor when he did not have qualifications for that job. But the larger issue is, was he only doing that because that was the only way he could manifest his true self? Okay, sure. But then that also means in some way, I mean, yeah, I'm sympathetic to that argument. Yes.
Yes.
But, you know, one could then, again, I don't want to equate this with being a gay person in a time when people were not accepting of gay people. But if you take it even further, because you brought it to the John Edwards thing, you know, he wasn't feeling the love of his marriage. And he had to pretend that he was in this solid marriage when actually, obviously, he was not in the solid marriage. Well, now we're in a different area where you're not pretending to be something else because society is harsh and bigoted. You're pretending to be something else because what you actually are is a hound dog, and society doesn't accept that in their political
right.
leaders.
That's true, but in an earlier time, I mean, there are reasons beyond. Because what you are as a hound dog, or someone who maybe one of the talking heads in your piece, Dan Savage, would say wants to pursue ethical non-monogamy, but the media doesn't allow it. Whereas in the past, you know, if FDR had, and by all reports did have such inclinations, it wouldn't have been such a problem. We don't do stories on the FDR scandal except as an asterisk to his overall legacy.
Well, more than that, I mean, the press corps knew and helped politicians cover that stuff up, mm-hmm. certainly as far back as the John F. Kennedy years. And it wasn't until truly Gary Hart, I think, was the real shattering of journalists letting politicians get away with things. And Matt Bai, if you haven't read it, Matt Bai wrote a fantastic book about the Hart scandal that I really recommend. I think it's called All the Truth is Out There or something like that. But Matt Bai, BAI, wrote a great book about it. So good. I gave him the highest compliment I could give. So good. I wish I had written it.
Yeah. It's a great book. It's a great reconception. Do you think that we advanced, or journalists advanced, by adopting the ethos of Hart and post-Hart, that if you are cheating on your wife or if you're engaged in an extramarital affair, we're going to put it on the front pages?
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's just the line now, that like if you cheat on a spouse and somebody can prove it, it will be news. Are we better off as a society for that? I don't know. That's an interesting question. I certainly think we're better off as a society if we're pointing out hypocrisy. Gary Hart was not running around out there talking about his perfect marriage with Lee in 1987, 1988, when he was running for president, the way that John Edwards was with Elizabeth. Mark Sanford, like his top aide, was his wife, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there is a difference. Also, obviously, with McGreevy, he was employing his lover, and probably the starkest is Eliot Spitzer, who was signing anti-prostitution laws, putting them on the books, and then violating them in his personal life.
So Blagojevich tries to argue the case, and I think he just enjoys arguing, that he was just engaged in politics. He wasn't engaged in anything illegal. And then I think of a case that was decided by the Supreme Court, McDonald versus the U.S.
Yeah.
And this was a 9-0 decision. I mean, so and at a time when, to remind people about when it was decided, I think in 2016, so there was Kagan and Breyer and Kennedy and Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg all agreeing with the three traditional conservatives that the former governor of Virginia took all these gifts. His conviction was to be overturned because they couldn't exactly prove the quid pro quo of doing the illegal act in office. And then after then a number of political scandals, including Sheldon Silver in New York, this case was reopened because all of these politicians who had been taking gifts because of this Supreme Court ruling, now you could go back and say, yes, but maybe they were just giving gifts because people like them and it had nothing to do with an official act.
Yeah.
Did that change? Well, I could ask you a couple questions about this. One, does that actually dovetail with what Blagojevich's argument is? But the other one is, did that change our conception of what corruption and scandal was?
Well, okay. So first of all, the McDonald case is a really important case for those who argue that prosecutors are out of control and there is a criminalization of American politics that goes on. In other words, and this is a big
Jake and I talk for a while, so if you want to listen to more from Jake Tapper, and who wouldn't, you can find and access that very elucidating longer version at subscribe.mikepesca.com. Just get an ad-free version of The Gist or get an ad-free plus longer interviews, at least one a week. We often have two. Is it that we go long or that I just invite on interesting guests and can't stop talking to them? You judge at subscribe.mikepesca.com. In this age of abundance, the key when it comes to meals is not just to get something in you, it's to get something good, delicious, good for you. Maybe you're a foodie, if you are a real one, you don't like to use that term, but you know going to a great restaurant that you're all excited about, there are reservations, there are bad tables, there's expensive and sometimes disappointing experiences. So let's say that doesn't work out, you try to throw together something from your pantry, or you're not as skilled a cook as maybe some of these great cooks are. Well, there is a service that I have been trying where the meals are delicious and plentiful and the people making them are experts. It's a collective of cooks who got together to give you a bevy, an abundance, yes, a cornucopia of delights. I had mission-style beef burritos made by Jose Garces, shrimp and smoked andouille sausage, is that it? With charred zucchini. It was charred for me. Isn't that nice? Esther Choi made me Korean flank steak rice bowl and asparagus. Thank you, Esther. Cook Unity is the name of the service. What I love about it is, oh my God, they have, you could say, you know, I am a pescatarian, which I am, but I also eat other things. You could say I don't have soy. Give me choices without dairy. They had here where I live 240 choices. You could order a couple weeks ahead and the meals come cooked, prepared. You just heat them up and they are delicious. The packaging is reusable. They last for a week. It's mostly about the quality and the variety, but every other thing that you think about, like not too much excess packaging, ease of delivery. When you go on the site, couldn't be easier to order. They tell you how many calories. They tell you the nutrition information. I love that. Not eating blind. For instance, the Mediterranean quinoa bowl with shrimp and tzatziki dressing was, you know, it made my heart sing. At 497 grams, only 4 grams of which were saturated fat. What protein? Micronutrient rundown. Just great stuff. Couldn't recommend it enough. Now we get to the price. And this is, I think, the biggest selling point, especially now for Gist listeners. Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to the door. Go to cookunity.com/thegist or enter code THEGIST before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using the code THEGIST or going to cookunity.com/THEGIST. This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about the Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters, and hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now the Antoine Tig, our name for a three-week period, which almost is never 3 weeks. Look, you get it. Sometimes words are created that mean something literal, and they come to mean just something, you know, more general. How often is an army decimated and actually loses 10%? Or take breakfast. Do we always break the fast? I mean, what if we have a midnight snack? What if it's classic breakfast for lunch? Would that be break fast, or would it be breakfast too? Electric Buffalo. I made some mistakes in the past few weeks. Among them, my reference to soap on a rope. I'm going to say tongue-in-cheekedly, but probably just flat-out stupidly, said something about in Spanish. This might be sopa on a ropa. Oh, my God. I was talking about the Mexican policy of abrazos non balazos, which is hugs, not bullets. We have hugs, not drugs. Of course, the abrazos non balazos policy is about bullets and drugs, certainly not the hugs. They're all interrelated. But the rhyme, many, many people pointed out, is not soap and rope in Spanish. Sopa is soup, ropa is clothes. You spilled soup on your clothes, you got your sopa on a ropa. In fact, Brian schooled me with a little rhyme. Apparently, sopa and ropa is so common that someone other than him worked out a rhyme. Spanish is a funny language where the ropa isn't rope and the sopa isn't soap and the butter's mantequilla, mantequilla. I like it. He also says that there is this phenomenon of thinking that the Spanish word is just the English word with a little os on the end, and the false cognates are known falsos amigos. I love that. It reminds me of something one of the characters in King of the Hill might say. Many people wrote in. One of them was Catherine Moore, who says that, Jaban is soap and ropa is clothing, not rope. You're going for something like cuerda, cord, rope. And then she signs off, Catherine from Los Gatos, California, which of course means the gates. No, that's a falsos amigos. It means the cats. I know there's a Boca Raton, Florida. I didn't know there was a the cats, California. The cats. From the non-Spanish-speaking world, Stefan Pisters wrote in and said that he grew up speaking Dutch and he was flummoxed by soap on a rope. He couldn't understand it. And he writes, now that I'm a little older, I understand that this is part of the emphasized cultural attention in the United States on safety and blame. It's why your fast food restaurants have to print careful hot liquid on the coffee cups, which seems almost idiotic to us. Yes, that is true. The Dutch, and I hope all the right-thinking people of the world could know that you shouldn't have to write hot liquid. Liquido caliente! It is liquido. That's not a falsos amigos. Liquido caliente. Pretty stupid thing to write. And he says, no, in the Dutch-speaking world, and he's going to extrapolate and say the German-speaking world, there is no item soap on a rope. Joshua Borga writes in to Twitter, at PescaMe, P-E-S-C-A-M-I. We also have PescaGist. When you begin the fade out of your interviews to mark the end of the free part of your show, I always think to myself, oh, wait, what was he or she about to say? And then my brain says, calm down. You got the gist of it. And then I nod and smile at my clever brain. I'm glad you made that little joke, but damn it, you're supposed to be discomfited. You're supposed to need to know. You're not supposed to tell yourself a pleasant joke to assuage yourself and tell you that you don't need to go to subscribe.mikepesca.com to get more of this interview. A lot of people have written in and said, could you not do the fade out? It's really annoying. I want to know. That's the point. That is the point. And anyway, I do swear to you that if there was no Pesca Plus, we'd be giving you the same quality interviews you're getting. We just wouldn't tease you with the information, the curse of information, that there was more out there. And a more serious note, John Neustadter writes in and said, hello, your main focus since October 7th has been the impact on Israel. And now whether I talked a little bit about systemic rape versus lots of awful rape by Hamas, will you ever focus on the many, 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 many thousands of innocent civilians killed by Israel in detail, consistently, no or yes? So it's a little confrontational. That's okay. We always have to stand up for our morality. I'm glad that Mr. Neustadter did not self-immolate on the way to delivering that email. That would be too much standing up. So I told him I frequently talk about the innocent victims. I always say that this is horrible. In fact, this is exactly why we're talking about the war in Gaza. If it was just this horrible thing, this horrible tragedy that happened to Israelis, and now they're rooting out a terrorist organization with no costs, we probably wouldn't talk about those efforts quite so much, right? We wouldn't agonize over them. If it was just some sort of manhunt, it would be more like a Pennsylvania prison escape, except, you know, 1,200 people died, as opposed to the smaller number of victims that that small Brazilian man claimed. So I wrote to him after I said, look, I do it all the time. I don't ignore it. Obviously, it weighs on me. He gave me a response saying, you know, do it more. And I'll read to you what I wrote to him. I talk about civilian deaths all the time. I don't generally do segments on them as specific catastrophes because I cover concepts and ideas more than events. I did cover the issue, right, as an issue of famine in Gaza. I have talked about the issue and mentioned amputations. I have and will continue to cover. I just recently covered the issue of proportionality, which you could say, oh, you're covering Israel military response, but in order to keep it a humanitarian response, you have to define and think about what it means to be proportional. Of course, undergirding that entire concern is if you're disproportionate, it's because you're killing civilians, too many civilians. And then I made an example to my coverage of Ukraine. And it's almost always about U.S. strategy or Russian strategy or Ukraine strategy or war aims. I really never did a segment just on, say, flat out the slaughter in Bucha or the terror of Mariupol's steel plant, right? I didn't take you inside and talk about the suffering that went on. And you know I'm 100% in support of Ukrainian resistance. And I've housed and asked everyone to donate. And you've been so generous in housing and finding permanent housing for the Denyushkins. They're here in America. And so you know where my heart is there. But I still have never done a full segments on the horrors of the victims, the civilians of Ukraine, just like I don't do it with Gaza. But I do understand, and I wrote this in the email, you hear more sympathy from me about Israel than Palestinians, and you would like that to change. And I wrote to him, I assure you, I have the same amount of sympathy for all the innocent victims, but I'm interested on the show. The segments are more intellectual and less fact-finding and me being in the field, because that's not what I do. I'm not a war correspondent. I'd like to be, or something that one day I would do. I have done some of that in the past, but here sitting behind a microphone, it's not what I do. I have the same sympathy for all innocent victims, but here I'm interested in things like how to assess culpability and what the strategy should be around the ongoing efforts to root out Hamas. What are the costs? What are the risks? What the real possibilities of doing that are? And I do appreciate your feedback. Indeed, I do. On to a lighter subject, which is to say, I think every subject in the world, now we issue our Lobstar. And in this case, the Lobstar, the best listener, the person who interacted in the way that instilled the most glee in the hearts of man, me being the man, woman, meaning Michelle Pesca, Chief Lobstar Fulfillment Officer of Peachfish Productions, and of course, the Quaint Mallards, which I bring up specifically because I shall now read you our Lobstar, Ellis Michael. He writes in, Mike, longtime listener, but I think that ends today. Don't worry, it doesn't take a horrible turn. This wasn't one of those Reddit posts where someone threatens that and goes through with it. I think that ends today. I've stopped in the middle of a run to tell you this. Today, in your intro, now this is when I talked about the trend of marriages, weddings, using falconry to deliver the wedding ring. Today in your intro, you had a dead bird, a bird whose health was being harmed, and a wedding ring. And at no point did you make a killing two birds with one stone pun. If I can't trust you to do that, how can I trust your coverage of the conflict in Gaza? Bringing it back. So I wrote Ellis. I understand leaving the listenership. It is a fight or flight response. I gotta say, that one was not a feather in my cap. I do, however, count you among the more radical wing of listeners. The rest mostly flock to me. And I will add to you, as I did not go on in the email, but thinking about this, I mean, I do think my tone was, I wasn't raving mad. I conveyed, I will allow it, but two can play at that game. He moved off his perch pretty quickly, and I don't want him to be a chicken about riding in, but if he's puffing out his chest, I mean, it's not a cardinal sin, it's more of a minor point, but, you know, I just wouldn't want to say, black-bellied whistling duck, my responsibilities. That last one was a little strained. I'll give you that. Do I regret it? Do I regret it? No, and I hope you, to make the transition from our avian friends to our crustacean-y pals and the plush version thereof, which I shall be sending you, sir, Ellis Michael. You, sir, are the Lobstar of this particular Antwentig. That's it for today's show. The Gist is produced by Corey Wara. The senior producer is Joel Patterson. Michelle Pesca is CLO of Peachfish Productions. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Umpru, gpru, dupru, and thanks for listening.